And welcome back, Margaret B., Bicycle Indiana, Life Behind Bars podcast. This is going to be our fourth episode. Still pretty new to this, but I think we're getting some great feedback and some great discussions. This week's episode, sorry for the kind of a week off, but trying to coordinate with a bunch of different individuals to schedule a time to record these podcasts. But this week is with two gentlemen that are a huge part of events, riding and running and adventure racing. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I'm really excited to add this discussion to our collection of podcasts because this is something that I think a lot of people aren't aware of racing-wise, and there's so many options when it comes to this series of races, and I really hope that you enjoyed this discussion with Brian and Joshua from Dino doing Indiana Off-Road, a race organization that has been going on for years. So we'll talk a little bit about the history as well as kind of what's in the future for these guys, right? If you're new to this podcast, again, please go to our website, check it out. Without your support and membership, we can't do the things that we do. But again, www.bicycleindiana.org. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. But yeah, really excited for you to listen in on this. All right, enjoy. All right. Really, really excited for these two gentlemen on this call today. Welcome to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Super new to this still, but this is going to be our fourth episode. I've got two great people from the organization business Dino, which is doing Indiana Off-Road. So I'm really excited to introduce these two. I'm going to first start with Brian. I'm not going to pronounce your last name because I already did not do it. But I'm going to start with Brian. If you want to just introduce yourself and let us know who you are, and then I'll go to Josh.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret. I'm Brian Holzhausen, and I have owned Dino since 2001. So that makes it almost 24 years. And we have started, since we bought it, we've added trail running, adventure racing, and off-road triathlon to what was just mountain biking through the 90s. So we'll probably talk more about the history later, but I'm the owner of Dino and that's my main thing for now.
And Josh, we've got Joshua Johnson on the phone, which is, to me, you're a new staffer as well for about a year, right?
Yep, I'm Joshua Johnson. I am the Dino assistant director. Brian brought me on. Actually been about 2.5 years now. Time's starting to go kind of fast. Yeah, that's my role, is I just am helping take care of everything behind the scenes and lessen Brian's load.
Nice. And Brian, you're located in kind of the outside of Indianapolis?
Yeah, we live in Hancock County, just east of Fort Harrison State Park, for anyone who knows where
I rode past your house. And then Josh, are you in the same area or are you?
I'm over in Noblesville.
Nice and cool. Well, again, my name is Margaret Baraskis. I'm the executive director of Bicycle Indiana. I started this podcast series to just talk about great people that are doing awesome things, cycling and outdoor activities. I'm in Terre Haute, but we're going to start off and just kind of talk about the history and a lot of different moving parts to this organization and what is so special about it and why we are here to talk about it. So first, let's talk about the history of Dino. Actually, you know what? Let's back up. A lot of people, and Brian and I talked about this before the call, they say Dino. Is it Dino or is it Dino, Brian? What is it?
Well, we answer to both, but I think the official pronunciation is Dino. I believe that's how it's always been starting in the 90s. And so we've continued that pronunciation. But certainly, if somebody calls it Dino, we don't react negatively. We understand what they're talking about.
All right. You've heard it from the boss. It's Dino. So doing Indiana Off-Road, do you want to talk, Brian, a little bit about the history and how you got involved and everything like that?
Yeah, Dino's been around a long time. In 1990, Chris Gutowski organized an event called the Gnawbone 90. It was a mountain bike race and held in that fall of 90 at Gnawbone Camp in Nashville, Indiana. That's right next to where Explorer Brown County is now. And they still have some trails over there, as a matter of fact. Then in 1991, they started a series called the Dino Series, Do Indiana Off-Road. And they had four mountain bike races that year. And then through the 90s, it grew. It became pretty popular and pretty well attended, especially in the mid to late 90s. And then in the late 90s, the ownership changed again. Kenny Cochran took ownership of it, and he had it for a couple of years. He was pretty busy with his other business endeavors that he was involved in, and it was kind of a side thing. And then during the year 2000, I was considering a change in career. At that time, from 96 to 2000, I was a civil engineer. I worked as a civil engineer. That was what I'm trained and educated, and that's where I started. And I just kind of lost passion in that, and I decided I wanted to look for something different. So I was looking at opening a bike shop or buying a bike shop at that time, and then about 1999, 2000 time frame, I was kind of thinking that way. Maybe I'll just change. And sure enough, about the fall of 2000, the owner, Kenny Cochran, announced that Dino was going to be up for sale, that somebody, anyone who wanted to take it over could talk to him and take over. And so I heard this at a cyclocross race that I was at with my friend. And I came home and I told my wife, Amanda, I said, I hear that they're going to be looking for a new owner to take over and run the Dino series. She said, oh, I wonder who would do that. And I just kind of grinned. And I said, I thought maybe we could do it. Oh, well, at that time we had a daughter that was only a couple of months old. So it was a big time in our life from that standpoint. And then we decided to do this more as a hobby. We didn't really think that it would be a viable business necessarily to be full-time, but it would be a fun hobby to do and just kind of keep me entertained by running races. It's not that hard, is it?
Right.
So,
right.
We decided to go for it, and we bought the series. I'll say bought, but it was very affordable at that time because there wasn't much to it. It was right. Kind of in a very small state and not a lot of value to it at that point. But we did buy it, and we started with mountain bike races, and then we added trail run races that fall. That was 2001. So during that year, as we started planning races and getting races going, I realized, number one, that this was a whole lot of work. It was going to be hard to do this full-time or do this and my full-time engineering job. And then number two, I realized that I enjoyed it a lot. And number three, I realized that we could make some money at this. So we put a lot of thought and a lot of prayer into it. And in July 1st, I believe it was 2001, I left engineering and made Dino my full-time thing. And it has been ever since.
And the rest
of it hasn't been easy. Yeah, it hasn't been easy, but we've made it as a career.
And how many kids later, right? Right?
Seven kids. So six more kids. Yeah, so six, seven total.
You've added Joshua to the staff, which is great. I think, Joshua, you bring a lot of great ideas and life and energy. What do you see now as added to the staff and how the progression of the organization and how you can improve it and make it even better?
First of all, thank you for the mention there. My role, first and foremost, has been kind of to relieve Brian of having so many events to manage. And as I've been kind of learning that and stepping up and taking on more and more roles within the company, my background and passion, which anyone that knows me knows that I'm a trail runner through and through, specifically in the ultra running community. So as Brian kind of steps a little bit further back and I take more of the role, I see a lot of opportunity for extreme growth. He's done such a good job of making these staple events. I think he's starting to allow me to kind of take my expertise, and that's sort of what I'm starting with. It's like what I know. What I know is the trail running. So we have so many events to try to like really focus in on every single one of them all at once is nearly impossible. So for me, I'm taking my expertise and saying, hey, what can I do with what I know, which is our trail running, and growing those events, seeing what's successful, what kind of feedback we get in response, and then I'll hopefully piggyback off of that.
Absolutely.
As I learn more about our, you know, riding community and adventure racing and all of that, take what's working within that and hopefully apply it to the rest of our sports and just continually grow and make more premium events with more community involvement.
Definitely.
So that's kind of my long-term goal there, is to just take what he's done and just keep improving it and growing it.
Yeah. Why reinvent the wheel? I mean, you guys have a great thing that's going on. And I think a lot of people don't realize the amount of time and logistics and work that goes into event production. It isn't just setting up a timing system and having timing chips. I mean, that alone right there is probably a lot of people's nightmares, because if you don't get that timing chip right, how many people are going to come up to you saying, my time is wrong, or, you know, whatever. So a lot of people know that I used to put on youth mountain bike races, and I 100% respect everything that you two do, because it is very stressful and it takes a lot of people and volunteers to make things happen.
It is.
A lot of work.
There's a lot of stress on race weekend and off race weekend. So it's absolutely, it's challenging.
So you're saying I can't come up and bug you about my time? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Or how to pronounce Dino. No, that's great. I appreciate the history and kind of like the future, you know, discussion of what's going to happen. And I think it's really incredible for our listeners to hear, because I think a lot of people, one, don't know what Dino is, right? As well as a lot of people don't know, there's this huge mountain bike, trail running, adventure racing. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But first, let's talk about mountain bike racing, since that's a big chunk of what you two do. I was hoping to kind of, one, just briefly talk about the mountain bike race series and how that kind of runs down, and then just kind of give a couple tidbits of information about each venue, so that way our listeners can know if they were wanting to try a race, which one they could do. So I don't know if Brian, you want to start to talk about the overview of the series?
Yeah, I can take that on. The series consists of 6 races each year, and the best 4 scores count. Now, you don't have to do any particular number. If you just want to show up at your local trail and do whatever's closest on your hometown trail, that's totally fine, and we'd love to have you. But if you do at least 4, you can go toward series points, and that'll count. You will have series awards for the age group winner in each division. We have divisions that go from all the way from intro, which is a first-time racer, up to the elite, which could be pros. We sometimes have pros, sometimes kind of semi-pros and things up in that level. But there's base and sport. Those are really the core of racing. The base level is sort of, you can ride pretty well, but you're not super competitive, maybe not the highest fitness level. At the sport level, it's pretty competitive. They're pretty fit riders, pretty skilled riders, but not quite to the expert level yet. And the expert level is the highest level when we combine that with the elite. So we have 6 races, and it varies a little bit from year to year, but we have a pretty solid core of venues. We usually start off with, well, first of all, we have a tune-up race, which is a practice race. And that one we move around quite a bit. This year it was up in West Lafayette, first time we've ever had a mountain bike event in West Lafayette area. That was pretty fun. And then, so that's just a practice race, really. Then the first series race has been at Winona Lake for quite a few years. We're part of the Fat and Skinny Tire Festival, which is, you've talked about that in, I think, your last podcast, the one before. And we enjoy being up there very much. It's a great trail, and it's fairly beginner-friendly. It's got some challenging sections, but not too overwhelming.
And a new field, if you listen to the last one. Don't get a pooper
truck. New parking area. Yeah, new parking area, new race field, so it's really good. Then we go to Brown County State Park, which is always solid with attendance. It's, you know, obviously Indiana's best riding destination for mountain biking. And so it's always pretty well attended there. A great course. Then we go to, this year we're actually going to Potato Creek State Park next. That's coming up here in about a week from the day we're doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. And Potato Creek is way up north by South Bend. It's a fairly easy course, I would say. But it flows really fun when you're riding fast. It's very fun and flowy. So it's not super technical, not big climbs, but it's a lot of fun. Then we go to North Vernon this year. We've been there most years. We've been there around July 4th. It's kind of our festival weekend, our Dino Challenge Festival. We have multi-day activities, trail running. We have a downhill mountain bike race. We have short track racing. We do a kayak rental outing where we rent our kayak fleet, go down the gorgeous Muscatatuck River. And then on Sunday is our cross-country mountain bike race. So a full weekend of activities there. And then we'll be going over to Griffin Bike Park over
Woo-hoo!
By you.
By me.
Yeah. Over at the beginning of August. And that's a great place to go as well. Then we wrap it up with, I missed one. We wrap it up with Southwestway Park in Indianapolis. That's always our series final.
Oh, Southwestway.
Southwestway is a good course for spectators. It's easy to see people multiple times. Good place. Good race course. I really like the race course because there's a good variety of some wide sections where you can pass and you can just kind of rev the speed up. And then there's some technical sections and then there's some pretty good climbs. So I like Southwestway a lot as a race course.
Definitely. And on their website for our listeners, you can go to dinoseries.com and there's a whole list of all their events and you can click on each one. Josh did a really great job with the website. There's pictures, information, everything like that. But if you're a new racer, a new rider that's thinking about possibly racing a mountain bike race, it can be intimidating. But Joshua, I'm going to put this one on you. What can a person or a rider anticipate if they're new to, like for the event, like what's the schedule like? What do they need to do if they show up and they need to get their bib number? What is a typical day for a Dino event for mountain biking look like?
So you're talking for a new rider, correct?
Yeah, a new rider.
So a new rider could expect to show up. I'd have to look at the schedule. You'd think we would have these things memorized as many times as we do them.
Right. You can just do general, you know.
At 8 a.m. at all of our events. So they would come up to the registration, tell us their name, and then we'll pull their plate. If they happen to be someone that wants to sign up day of, which is something we offer, a lot of places do not, as we have a day of registration, comes at a little bit more of an expense, but for those last second people, it's nice and convenient. So you can come up, register, you get your plate. Then from there, you just kind of need to know when your start time is. We normally start in different waves where there's some lines and we'll kind of tell everybody over the speaker and megaphone like, hey, if you're in this age group, you need to be back here. And other than that, you just need a bicycle and a helmet. That's all you really have to do to race in one of our races. And then you can kind of look at the different categories. If you're brand new, you can do intro. We actually offer that for free to first-time riders. So if you're just dabbling with the sport and want to see where you stand, that's a great way to kind of just check yourself and see if it's your thing.
Sure. Brian, did you want to add anything?
I'll add to that a little bit. Yeah, on our website, we have a race guidebook, which
perfect.
Is a document, and it is super helpful. It's the race rules. So for the people who want to make sure they're following all the rules of the race and be competitive, that's absolutely a necessity to know. But it's actually really helpful for first-time racers and newer racers because it tells some helpful tips on how to register and how to check in and what you need and what to expect, how to line up. You know, one of the questions is, how do you line up for the start line? Because we actually have three start lines. The first line is usually under our big arch, affectionately known as Archie. And that start line is the solid stripe. And the solid stripe is for those who are ready to go. That'll be the first wave to roll off. And then a little bit back is the dashed line. That's for the second wave to go. And then behind that is a dotted line. That's for the third wave. And so each time the horn blows, that line can move up one space. So it helps stage people in the right place. And we want to make sure that everybody knows where they need to be before they're ready to roll. And also Joshua mentioned the 8 o'clock registration. You don't have to show up at 8 to register. If you're racing in the afternoon, like at 12:40, sometimes we'll have groups that start as late as 12:40. If you're racing later, you can just show up half hour to an hour before your race and be totally fine. So yeah, anytime between 8 a.m. and your start time.
Sure. No, that's great.
I'm glad you mentioned the guidebooks too. Those are extremely useful. I'll ask him questions all the time and in emails, he'll refer me back to the guidebooks. So very useful.
Well, now I learned that the arch is named Archie. So I appreciate this discussion. I'm knowing the secrets of Dino right now. I'm going to talk about two more things in the mountain bike category, and then we're going to move on to Joshua's big topic, which is trail running. But we got to talk about gravel and death march, which I have participated in both. I have died and brought back to life many times on those rides. And I don't know if Brian or Josh has a better description of these two events, but they are known to be very grueling, very challenging, and gravel. You can do it on a mountain bike, but gravel races, right?
Yeah, there's a good mix of bikes out there for both races. I'd say probably at Gravel Gravel, we see mostly gravel bikes and a few mountain bikes. Death March is a little bit closer to an even mix, but still a little heavier on gravel bikes, but any bike will do and we'll get you through the course. If it's really a wet day, the mountain bike might do a little bit better. But the two events, if you're not familiar with them, the two events on the surface seem kind of similar. We use the same general area and a lot of the same gravel roads, and even trails will be used for both events. So they kind of seem like they might be similar, but they're actually very different. Different experience.
Yes, they totally are.
The Gravel Gravel is a race. It's a hardcore race, and some pretty serious riders take it on. It's a marked route, and the epic 100K is the long route, and then you have sort of a mountain bike course that's about 24 miles as well. But it's just a serious race, really. It's a mix, mostly gravel with some pavement, some trail. There's some single track, there's some fire road, double track, there's everything in it. It's not just a gravel race, it's a mix of everything. So that's what I like about it. It kind of levels the playing field between the roadie and the mountain biker, because it's some of everything.
Absolutely.
But then when we talk about the Death March, totally different experience, and you really have to do it to understand, I think, because it's very different. It's sort of like an adventure race. It's all on bikes, but you're using a camera or your smartphone now to take a selfie at cemeteries. So you ride to cemetery, you take a selfie, and it's not just about how many you go to or how fast you do it, but each one offers a time discount, time bonus. So if you get there and you take a selfie, you will get 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 40 minutes taken off of your net time to give you, or taken off of your gross time to get your net time. And there are a few that are mandatory. You put three out there way ahead of time, or about several weeks ahead of time, we put three out there that are known mandatory, and that will kind of make sure that the course is at least a certain length long. And then two more are drawn on race morning at random. That is to mix up your strategy a little bit. So sometimes you have to think on the fly, oh, well, that's a mandatory now. We weren't planning to go there. How are we going to get there? What are we going to do along the way? Which ones are we going to reach on the way? So that mixes it up. And then we added a few years ago, we also added dead cemeteries, which mean that some of them, two of them, are not worth anything. So if your strategy was to get a whole bunch of bonus time, say going to Callahan Cemetery, which is the one that's famous for being on trail.
I was going to ask, which one was that? Yeah.
That's the one that you have to use trail to get to it. And if it's muddy, it's a long slog. So if, let's say Callahan is drawn as a dead cemetery, that could totally change your strategy, because maybe you had a mountain bike with you and you were planning to ride out there and get that one for the time bonus.
Right.
That really changed things up. So the dead cemeteries mix things up. So do the random picks on race morning.
And you're in pairs, right? You're in pairs.
Yeah, it's a pair. Yeah, I didn't mention that. That's a good point, because you have to do it in a pair of two riders. And so your team has to stay together the whole time.
Nice. My one death march I did with a buddy, Craig Reynolds, who you probably know. And he gave me a caffeine pill. And this was before I understood like goos and like Gatorade and like how to fuel. And I was like, oh, this is fine. I'll be okay. And we're going up this, I don't know, trail system. And he's like, come on, Margaret, let's go. And I was bonking bad. And he's like, well, just take this. And I was like, what is it? And he's like, a caffeine pill. I have never felt my heart feel like it was going to pop out of my chest ever. And I've never taken that again. Yes, Craig Reynolds. I remember that day. But anyway,
They say never try anything new on race day, and you violated that rule.
I did. But anyway, Josh, did you want to add anything about those two events?
I think he covered those really well. There's not much that I could really say besides go register for them and have a great time.
I would say it's just a classic for the state, especially Gravel, because it's always the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So you can be at home, eat a ton of food, maybe get a little partying in, and then maybe have a hangover and go do gravel. And I'm sure you see all sorts of riders come through that are happy, sad, whatever.
Yeah. It's a full range there. We got the fast riders that just, you know, that's just ticked off. They just tick off the miles and get it done fast. And they're just hardly breathing at the end.
Right.
And you get those who just survive, barely make it through.
Right.
Especially when the weather can really throw a wrench in either of those, because it's right at the beginning of winter time or right at the end of winter time on the two extremes. And we've had some pretty crazy weather on some of those.
Ah, yes.
2022, people about needed a kayak for Death March.
Oh my gosh. But hey, you have those though, right? So it works.
Yeah.
So let's move on. I appreciate all the information about the kind of the mountain biking and the biking part of it, but let's move on to trail running. So Josh, you want to take this away since this is your love, trail running?
Sure. I mean, we offer, just like our mountain bike series, we have, it's more or less a mirror of the mountain bike series, how the trail run series works. So same stops as the mountain bike series. The only major difference is the races take place on Saturday, whereas the mountain biking takes place on Sunday. And it's a 5K and 15K. There's series points just like the mountain biking. And the courses are generally going to be very similar to the mountain biking. Sometimes there are some differences here and there, but more or less they follow a similar design because that makes it a lot easier on me and Brian when we're out there marking everything.
Absolutely.
And yeah, we stop at all the same places aside from being that the trail runs kick off a little earlier. We do go up to Mound State Park, and this year we eliminated Eagle Creek. That was a pretty popular venue, but it got quite expensive. So we tried out Payne Town down in Bloomington this year, and it was well received.
Okay.
Aside from that, all the stops are the same as the mountain biking. They just take place on different days. And then we have some ultras and some standalone events.
So for our listeners, what is an ultra marathon or an ultra race?
An ultra by definition would be any race longer than a marathon. So on a technicality, 26.3 miles would be an ultra, but commonly ultras almost always start out at 50K and go as far as 200 miles, but it's normally 50K, 50 mile, 100 mile, 100K.
That's insane. I was laughing earlier. I don't think I could even imagine running more than a marathon, but good for you. That's awesome.
It's a lot of power hiking and eating.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about eating. What do you eat when you run?
I'm kind of an exclusion to the rule. I have a lot of GI issues when I run. So anyone familiar with Scratch Labs products?
Definitely.
I go almost exclusively liquid nutrition, and I just kind of add extra scoops to get more calories and carbohydrate. But I try to do that. It seems to work best for me, but there does come a certain point. Like this past weekend, I ran 100K. And on the back half of it, I probably should have been eating some real solid foods because I got pretty violently hungry by the end of it.
Oh, no.
I think I was probably calorie depleted. That's my fueling strategy. But when you come into most aid stations, it's going to vary from event to event. But you'll see things like pretzels, electrolyte drinks, maybe some goo or gel type products, quesadillas. Some places are going to have... It's not uncommon to see fireball shots or something at some races. Oof. I can't imagine ever doing that while I'm running, but to each their own.
Right. Nice.
It's a unique sport. It's definitely nothing like our trail run series whenever you're getting into the ultra running.
So for a new runner who's wanting to run a 5K, similar type of situation, they have registration. Do you want to go through that a little bit?
Yeah, you would just get on the website. We normally will close out the registration a day or two before the actual event. So you could do it there, or most of our events, actually, I think all of our events, we still offer day of registration. Now we hope to eventually grow some of those ultras to the point that maybe they're sellout events, but we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you would just sign up, and then day of you'd come check in, get your bib. If you have any questions, our staff would be able to handle all that, walk you through it, but it's a very straightforward process.
Okay. Maybe I'll try a trail run. I did buy trail shoes and I do trail run. However, I don't think it's the same type of trail running that maybe you two both do. It's more like easy crushed limestone, maybe.
I've seen some of your Strava tracks. I'm running. You're up there running. You're on some trails.
I'm trying, and then it hurts for 3 days. But anyway, let's talk, as we're talking about running, you've got triathlon and adventure racing. Which one do you want to talk about first? Because I'm going through your website and our listeners need to know.
Well, we'll talk about triathlon first since that's coming up next in our schedule.
Yeah.
Off-road triathlon is something that we've been doing for quite a long time as well. We didn't start it the very first year I was with Dino, but I think the next year we did. So that would have been 2002. But it's off-road triathlon, and triathlon is a swim, bike, run event. And we do ours off-road, because of course, because we're Dino, do Indian off-road. And our first one is this year, the first one will be the Xterra, which is a Potato Creek State Park event of Northern Indiana. And that is a reasonably short half mile swim. And then the mountain bike course is about 14 miles. And the run course is about 4. So it's not too hard. It's manageable for somebody who can handle a little bit of all three sports. We also offer a kayak division where you can kayak instead of swim. And we offer a duathlon where you can run a short run, then bike, and then run again. So those are the three types of activities there at that event. And then the second triathlon we offer this year will be the gravel triathlon. Last year was our first time doing that over at Griffin Bike Park, Terre Haute. And it is just what it sounds like, gravel cycling. Instead of riding on the road or trail, we ride gravel roads. The swim is short, it's about 500 meters. Then the gravel ride is about 12 miles of nice rolling terrain. And then a trail run around Griffin Bike Park. So the trail run is a fairly moderate course. So it's that's actually a very beginner friendly race. Both of them really are, but the gravel triathlon would be good even for somebody who's never mountain biked, because it's not technical at all on the mountain bike or on the bike course.
You did pick a pretty gnarly course for the gravel, because I saw your markings out there one day and I thought, these poor souls, because it was just some chunky, real chunky gravel. But hey, that's part of racing.
There is some rough gravel, so you know, mountain bike might not be a bad choice on that one.
right.
Don't have to be a gravel specialist to race that.
Right.
Yeah.
And for our listeners, Xterra is a bigger organization that is a sanctioning body. Is that right?
It is. Xterra is a pretty big worldwide organizer of events that has world championship, national championships, and different European and all around the world races. And so when we started with them, they had quite a few US races, and then they sort of decided to go with quality over quantity. So they cut a lot of them out. So we are fortunate to still be one of the US races. There's only a few US races in the Xterra series now, because they're just focusing on the worldwide scene of Xterra. Which is fine. We love the quality level that goes into Xterra, but there's not as many of them around in the US as there used to be.
So now we have adventure racing. So I don't know if Josh, you want to tackle that one, what adventure racing is?
I wanted to note something. Talking about the triathlons kind of hurt my memory here a little. A difference between the trail run series and the mountain bike series, sandwiched within our triathlons, we actually have bonus races.
Oh,
so that is one difference between the mountain bike series and the trail run series. The trail run series, we have two bonus races where participants can earn up to 10 points. That may be the difference in the series of whether or not they beat out somebody they're neck to neck with.
Yeah.
They can also earn their bonus points with trail maintenance too, with what we call pay dirt points.
Very nice.
Now, that is not something we currently offer for mountain biking. It's exclusive to the trail run series.
Okay, so adventure races. Who wants to talk about
that? I can talk about adventure racing.
A lot more about that one.
Yeah, adventure racing is probably my favorite sport of all, even though I don't get to participate a lot. So adventure racing, some people think of mud runs and obstacle runs, and that's not actually adventure racing. That's more obstacle racing. But some people call that adventure racing. A true adventure race is a multi-sport event, usually consisting of either canoeing or rafting, foot travel, and bicycle travel. And it involves using a map and compass the whole time in most cases, and traveling as a team in most cases. So you have a team of 2, 3, sometimes 4 people, and you'll do the whole race together, not a relay style. And it can be very unpredictable. It's not a marked route like a triathlon where you know exactly where you're going. You're given the map and the next checkpoint, but you don't know exactly the best way to get there. You might take a trail, you might bushwhack through dense forest, or you might take a road. And sometimes there's multiple options that make sense. So if you feel like you really want to just get there the short line way, you're going to be bushwhacking through vegetation and up and down ravines, but it might only take 500 meters to get there. Or you could use a trail that's a little easier, but it could take a mile to get there. Or maybe you could ride a road that takes 2 miles to get there, but it's a nice smooth road. So you have to decide what the best route is in a lot of cases. So it's navigation and the physical element and the teamwork element that makes adventure racing great, in my opinion. Put them all three together, and it's a great sport to me.
Definitely. And it looks like you have on your website 4 events that you host.
It's 4 events if you count each one as 2, because there's a light race and a full length race on each one. The light race is kind of designed for beginners, and it's only, I use quotation marks, only 4 hours long. The light race is a beginner friendly race. So some people think a sprint race, 4 hours long, what's this about? But it is very beginner friendly. We try to make it a little easier, make it easier for navigation, and make it so that they get to experience a little bit of each sport. It's like a sampler of adventure racing. But the long races, our mission is 18 hours long, and our Central Indiana Adventure is 12 hours long. So they're pretty hardcore lengthwise, but you don't have to be an elite athlete to finish. You can walk it. If you don't feel like running, you can just walk most of it, and you don't have to be fast, because we typically loop the course around. So if you're running out of time, you just come back and finish. You don't have to follow the exact route that we thought you would follow. Just get back to the finish line in time.
Sure. Josh, do you want to add anything?
Worth mentioning, Brian does a really good job of planning some kind of unique aspects to our adventure races too. Last year in Versailles, participants actually got to rappel the side of a water tower.
What?
It's about 150-foot rappel.
Oh, how fun.
So that was unique. There was also a stop where they got to stop at, I believe, one of the bigger archery, or what was the place? The rifle, what's that place called?
The National Muzzle Loading Rifle Association.
What?
And they got to shoot at the target. If they hit the target right away, they get to move on faster.
And that's like one of the bigger facilities like that in the United States, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it?
Yeah. For that, for muzzle loading, it is the number one place.
Yeah.
You hear that,
so
listeners?
He always does a good job of having some type of unique event like that, if at all possible.
Definitely. All right. Well, if anyone has questions, or your listeners, you can go to their website. Lots of information, lots of great pictures and documents to help you. But I'm going to move on to kind of, we touched a little bit, Josh did at the beginning, but talking about the goals of the organization, as well as kind of like data numbers. You know, don't give me exact data numbers, but, you know, have you seen an increase, you know, in registration, as well as, I kind of want to bring up the topic of COVID, because I think please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, Brian, you at the time of COVID were one of the only events that was running.
Yeah, that's a good point. That was an interesting time for everybody, and us especially, because as you would imagine, that we couldn't hold events during the COVID main part when they had everything closed up. So we had about 4 events during that time that were no-goes because of the local agencies' restrictions and so forth, state guidelines. We did start back up much sooner than most other surrounding states and organizations. We were able to start back up in June, early June, for our Brown County races. We had to have some pretty good restrictions in place with trying to enforce some social distancing. We did things a little bit differently with check-in and with lining up for the start and post-race. We didn't hand out awards, have a big gathering, that kind of thing. So we did things differently, but we were among the first to come back. We were in Indiana. We were probably, there was an organization that did a race a week or so before ours, but we were pretty much at the beginning of that. And then for mountain biking, all the surrounding states were still pretty locked down. And so we had people coming down that typically would participate in the war series up in Wisconsin or from Michigan. We had lots of people. So even though financially it hurt us there for a few races, it caught back up when we had great attendance all season for mountain bike racing, and then some good attendance at an adventure race that late summer really helped out. So it turned out to be overall a pretty good year. And we had some people that gave us some donations. They were very generous people that knew that we were kind of struggling through that time a bit. So people just donated to us, which was really appreciated. And we had some people register for races that we turned into a virtual race. You know, most people wouldn't need to do that, but they did because they wanted to support us. So we felt really very blessed by that.
I remember that Brown County race. I raced sport that year, and that was my first or maybe second Dino race ever. And I just thought, there are so many people here. And then you would turn around huge. And people were gone. Like, they would just race and then go home and no awards or nothing. Yeah. But it worked though. And it was great to see all those people. And I remember during the COVID time and putting on mountain bike racing and going through the permits and getting approval. Like, Marion County had the most intense application for COVID restrictions that you had to do. And I don't know if you had to fill that out, but that took me hours to try to tell children to social distance, which you can't. So, but anyway.
Yeah, that was definitely a challenging year trying to make sure everything was done properly. And we had some other headaches behind the scenes, which I won't go into, but it was a challenging time.
So COVID went well in a way for registration and data numbers. And are you hoping to see more? Are numbers staying? Don't give me exact numbers, but are you seeing, you know, good progression, and hopefully the future looks much better with more registrations and new people coming out?
Yeah, we see ebbs and flows. And as I look back, I have a history of race attendance numbers over the years. And we've had highs and lows. We're not at a high right now. We're definitely not at a low. We're doing pretty well, but we've had high peaks and valleys, and it just kind of comes and goes. And I think that what Joshua's been doing with the ultra marathons, I think that's going to help get those up. And we're probably going to focus on mountain bike events and gravel shortly after he focuses on those and try to get those grown again. And so it seems like it's good that we have the diversification between running and cycling and the multi-sport events, because there are some years when running is really, really strong, but mountain biking's down a bit. And then there's other years of the other way. So the COVID year was that way. Running was off. Even when we came back, running wasn't that great, but the mountain biking was awesome. So those kind of things happen sometimes. It just seems like there's little miniature trends that cause that. Sorry, my phone is...
You still have a landline? Okay.
Yeah. Someone keeps calling.
I would also add in there, we're also a company that some of our success is heavily dictated by the weather, too. Yeah. Last year, we had a lot of rain. And as you know very well, mountain bikers tend to stay home if the weather's too bad because they don't know what the trail conditions are going to be like. Or maybe they don't feel like cleaning their bike up this weekend. So they just say, not this time around. Whereas trail runners, a lot more likely to come out and go ahead and run because they just get back in their car and wipe down, take their shoes off. It's a lot easier than having to deal with the headache of your bike.
Right. No, that's a great point. And I think as well, for not just mountain biking and running, but even road events, and I think other events, people are watching the weather. Like Winona Lake, I felt while I was watching registration for their crits and road races, there was like 128 people the week before. And I thought, they usually get like 500 or more, like 800 people registered. And then that week leading up, it was over and over and over and over again. Just registration was bumping up by hundreds and hundreds. And it was because of the weather. People were waiting, right? So I'm glad that you're seeing good ups and downs. And hopefully as we talk about this and our listeners tune in, they'll maybe try, right, a mountain bike race or an adventure race or a triathlon. But that leads me into the next good question is if somebody were interested in volunteering, helping you out, event production is tough. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of manpower, a lot of man hours, setting up the course, as well as I know snow fencing, it's tough. It's a tedious job, but it makes the event. How can somebody get involved, and what do you guys need help with?
I'm going to take that, Joshua. Go ahead.
Very first thing they could do if they're at all interested is just email us. Very easy email. It's info@dinoseries.com. Some of our registrations, like our ultras and things like that, there's actually a button on there where you can click volunteer. And we're working on building up some obvious things like aid station shifts and what your options might be. I mean, we have one event that's going to be 24 hours long this year. So we're going to create some windows of availability for people to look at. But other than that, we're actually right now, we're looking for a new head timer. Our previous head timer had some career opportunities, so she's a lot more unavailable this year. So we would like to find a new staffed head timer for our events. And that is one way you can get involved with us too. We have commissioned staff out of a lot of our events. However, we're also totally open to volunteers. Me and Brian have been discussing some different ways to kind of encourage more volunteers, whether that's through a point system of so many hours served equals X dollar toward event. So we haven't really established exactly what that's going to look like yet, but we are working on that. But the easiest way would to be just reach out and ask us what we need help with. It's normally going to be a Friday event setup, timing, photography, check-in, things like that during events. And then obviously tearing down the site, that's a lot of work too. Or maybe someone could volunteer, just say, hey, I like to run. I want to go run your course after the event and pull all your markings out for you.
Yeah.
So we have lots of ways people can get involved. I would also further encourage people to get involved with their local trail organizations with maintaining the trails and going and putting some work out there, because sometimes our events do a little bit of damage here and there to the trails, and we do our best to not have events if it's going to be hard on the trail.
Right.
But, you know, we're financially invested in our events, and so are our athletes. So we have to consider that whenever we're making those calls of whether or not we're going to have a race.
Well, and also even leading up to the event, you know, maybe people could go out and help trim and make sure the trails are ready to go. I know Winona Lake probably had a lot of volunteers out there with KCB, just making sure the trail system was ready for you to come out and mark and get things going.
And they do a great job with that. But like Brown County, we were actually out there creating drains on that race because we had a lot of rain the night before.
You
so
did.
We were doing everything we could possibly do to help the trail receive riders the best that it could.
Most definitely. Well, you'll have to keep on your radar. I don't know. This course might be too easy, but the new bike park that's coming out in Lebanon, it might be way too easy for your event, but it would be really fast.
Yeah, we're certainly keeping an eye on that. We always like to support new and smaller events, or not events, but trail systems, sure, because it introduces new people to the sport. So certainly we'll keep an eye on them.
Absolutely. Okay, so my last question, I think right now, I don't have any new questions written down in my paper. My last question is one, Brian, or I mean, ask both of you, but Brian, what is your favorite mountain bike course? Out of all the courses we talked about, what's your favorite course?
I'd say my favorite is probably, from a race director standpoint, probably North Vernon, Miskatuck Park. It's great for spectators because you can go see the course in about three spots with a very short walk.
Okay.
It is set up with a lap length that's just about right to do four laps, three laps, two laps, one lap, which makes things easy on us. So, for example, one lap is intro, four lap goes up to expert, and then so it's easy set up that way. It is nice with all the camping and shelters there. We pretty much have rain in the park for the weekend, all Dino people. So there's people, lots of Dino people are camping in the campground. And we have a sort of a festival camping that's dirt cheap. So you can camp with your tent, or even actually you can put an RV there with no utilities. But right across from the race site, it's only $2 a person per night. So
wow,
very good deal there. And like I said, we have rain of the whole park for the weekend, pretty much. There's only a few people in there that are not Tino people. So it's really fun to be there all that weekend. And it's a tough course. So, you know, especially if it rains, that course can be brutal on mountain biking. But it's probably my favorite course because we just are very welcomed there by the park management. And they support us and they want us to have a great experience with all the riders just taking over the park.
Sure. All right, Joshua, what's your favorite, I guess, trail course, trail running course?
I'm going to have to answer that with a couple of answers. For
okay,
our series, I'm going to go with Paintown out on the Pate Hollow Trail. I think that is probably our hardest course, If you do the 15K, it's got somewhere around 1,500 foot of gain. So a little more hilly than some of our other courses. And I would argue that it's probably the prettiest. It borders up against Lake Monroe.
I think a lot of
people just really enjoy it. It's a very popular trail down in that area. But pivoting to my two-part answer here, that's hard. Tecumseh's a really good one. I think
I've been pronouncing it wrong this entire time. I've been saying Tecumseh.
I have heard it pronounced really, really weird. Actually, my fiance wants to do a reel where we just get people pronouncing it, because it would be hysterical to hear all the variations of how we hear it said. But that, if it goes back point to point, because of the uniqueness of being point to point, would be my favorite. But for now, I'm going to have to go with our Jackson County course. Overall, it is pretty flat and fast, but it has 1,600 foot of gain that hits with about three climbs. So when the climbs hit, they hit, making it brutal. And that's kind of what I look for in a course, is I want the hardest thing I can get.
Yeah.
And it's also a gorgeous course, too. You get up there and you have these vistas where you can just look out and you've got a 360 view.
That's great. All right. So do we have anything else that you guys want to touch on before we kind of wrap things up?
Nothing that I could think of, but I'd just love to see more people trying it out, or if we have mountain bike riders listening, or even if we're just dabbling in mountain biking, our intro level is a good place to start, because it's a fun way to try it out without much risk. It's usually 5 miles or less. And the people that are in that group are all first timers, or nearly all first timers. So good place to start and try it out for mountain biking.
Joshua?
And I would throw out there too that we are a very family friendly organization. All of our events try to incorporate kids. All the races, like the series races, have kids races. So bring your kids out. That's generally going to be a free race where you just sign a waiver.
Definitely. So people can go to www.dinoseries.com. There's lots of information, like I've mentioned a couple times on the call today, or the Zoom call. You can find events, news, mountain bike events, adventure racing, triathlon, even where to volunteer. So I appreciate Brian and Joshua being here today to talk about Dino. And for all the listeners, right, it's Dino. And Tecumseh, what'd you say?
Tecumseh, not Tecumseh.
But there's a Tecumseh, Michigan, so that's why I think I say it like that. But anyway,
Muscatatuck. Huh? Muscatatuck. It's funny to hear people pronounce Muscatatuck in North Vernon. There's 25,000 different ways to say it.
And then Versailles and Versailles. Isn't that another one? Yeah. So, well, go to Dino's website. Check them out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, it looks like, on their website. They've got a lot of great content out there. And again, reach out to them at info@dinoseries.com. I appreciate you too. We're going to wrap up this call. I'll edit it and hopefully get it posted here next week.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
And great. Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.